Hot girls do hot girl shit, right? And Gundam shows do psychic boy space robot shit, right? Wrong. Today we're reviewing one of the best single episodes of all the Gundam series. Welcome to the 8th MS team. Hey everyone, welcome to Aging Otakus, the retro anime podcast. I'm Jorge, I'm here with Eric today, and we're going to be talking about Mobile Suit Gundam, the 8th MS team, shortly. But before we get to that, just wanted to make sure you guys knew that our social media accounts are at Aging Otakus on Twitter and Instagram, just if you want to keep in the know of what we're going to be reviewing, or do you just want to see entertaining memes and whatnot that we'll be posting about all those lovely 80s, 90s, early 2000s anime. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm good, bro. I, like you, have joined the upper crust of society, and I've obtained a PlayStation 5 home video game console. So
hell yeah.
I'm kind of stoked on that. Which is probably also why we haven't done an episode in a number of weeks.
Look, but, Miles Morales needed some playing, all right?
I mean, I haven't touched it yet. I think I've got one of my buddies is going to, like, in my neighborhood is going to drop it off, I think, when I get around to it. But as of right now, I'm still playing a lot of Demon Souls. Like, that's my main jam right now.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I know we've gone over a bit, you know, just between ourselves about how I just can't. I haven't yet clicked with those games, but mm-hmm. I gotta love them. I gotta appreciate them for, you know, for what they are, and just from a game design and like visual design standpoint, they're wonderful. So very 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 happy for you, even if those games frustrate me.
And also, I mean, like you said, the visual design of Demon Souls is great because it's like it really is. I think the only next gen game that's like really showing off the power of the PS5, and I think like Blue Point Games, the guys who redid the remake of it, are like hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, I think it's the only one that's not a cross gen that I can think of, a cross gen game.
It's Bugsnax.
And well, I think that's on PS4 also.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think that's really the only one.
I think when you got your PlayStation 5, you were talking about Astro's Playroom, and I mean that game was great. Like I finished that game in one night, but it was like a blast.
Yeah, that was fantastic. So I guess that, you know, it was a pack-in game, but yeah, that counts. That should count too. That was just like a little delightful, fun little romp for a night or two.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the secret boss, the T-Rex?
I did get the T-Rex.
That was fun.
That was fun. I was actually like, that was like the hardest part of the game, which I mean, you know, it's a tech demo, but I did a couple tries and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I appreciated it because I'm not I wasn't really a PlayStation guy in earnest until probably the PlayStation 3. I mean, I never had a PS1. I mostly played it at my friend's house, and then I got a PS2 really late in the game. And then I was an Xbox 360 guy until later in the game. And then PS3 when I finally got into my PS3 collection and all that, I started really appreciating a lot of the Sony first party stuff and some of the other exclusives.
Yeah.
And it was a cool, you know, coming from more of like a Nintendo and then Xbox background, it was cool to go through that Sony history and just like feel the love for mm-hmm. all of those games and all those like gaming icons over the years.
Well, yeah. And it's an interesting thing because it's like when you kind of see like a fetishization of like your own history, you don't get that from like Sony and Microsoft. That's usually like, that's a Nintendo thing.
Yeah. 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 It was like Nintendo doesn't have a monopoly on like gaming nostalgia. But we don't realize that. I mean, we don't realize Sony's been in this for what?
25 years.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Which is insane. I mean, that's like a majority of video game history at this point, or just barely.
I mean, yeah, it was like Gen 3 was like the PlayStation. Is that Gen 4 technically, or is it Gen 3? It doesn't matter, but it's a quarter of a century of gaming history. And I think, you know, having seeing it, like it was a nice change that you would not normally expect from like PlayStation and Sony.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very cool. So, you know, if you can get one, highly,
if you dirty plebs can get one,
you know, don't buy it from a scalper.
Yeah. Oh, screw well, those can guys. So shout out to the homie Derek, who he hopped into the PlayStation Direct queue with me, and he nabbed it, and it was just like, he called me like as soon as I had gotten the notice that PlayStation was out of stock. He calls me and he's like, "Hey man, just letting you know, you owe me like $500+ because I got you a PlayStation 5." And so, you know, shout out to Derek for being a real good homie, and congrats on the baby, I guess.
That's the $500 Venmo request you want to get.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was more than happy to Venmo that back. But before we get into anything else, Jorge, like, let's address the elephant in the room. Have you played Cyberpunk 2077?
I have. I played it for maybe, I don't know, less. It says about a dozen hours, but I have a bad habit of pausing and then walking mm-hmm. away and like running a marathon and coming back to the TV. But yeah, I got it on PS5, you know, obviously the PS4 version.
Right.
Playing backwards compatibility. I appreciate what they've done and what they're going for. I was definitely enjoying it, but my experience so far has been so buggy and janky that I opted for the refund and I uninstalled it because I have other games I could be playing.
Right.
I feel it, you know, it's a little paranoid, but I feel like I don't want to lose my save or like my, you know, minutes or hours of progress or whatever while I'm playing either. So I'd rather wait for it to be a little more stable. But I mean, it's a cool world. I mean, there's a lot to be said, good and bad, about the whole situation around it. And I definitely recommend, if people are interested in that, to do a little bit of poking around. But a bittersweet disappointment. I would say,
right. Well, what was your main issue? Were you just having a lot of like, because when I was playing it on my PS5, I was getting like, I think before I had opted also for the return, I think I had gotten like 10 hard crashes within like, you know, 3 days of play. And yeah. I had numerous, you know, janky bugs and graphical errors. Like, you know, it was like moments, like really heartfelt moments of like this story where, you know, a main character is like dying, and you know, it's hard to kind of take it seriously or kind of be immersed in the story, which is a decent story, when like, you know, the character who's like dying in your arms is like got a gun sticking out of his head because it's like a graphical glitch. So
right, I was getting a lot of those visual glitches and bugs and like the wrong animation playing or the wrong response, you know, the wrong dialogue playing to the wrong movement kind of thing. But I was definitely getting a lot of crashes as well, which I mean, I got like one hard lock in Miles Morales and that was it. Mm-hmm. And in Cyberpunk, I was crashing at the longest span between crashes would be like an hour, I would say.
It's about the same for me.
But I would get them more repeatedly some days, just depending on what I was doing. So
definitely kudos to you for being a good consumer and returning it and like sending a message to the company.
Definitely a wait and see. I mean, I plowed through the jankiness of Avengers, which still has a little bit of jank, and this was still too much.
So Avengers was not worse than Cyberpunk?
No, it depends on what you mean worse, but it Avengers delivered more of what it was promised to be and what it should be versus
it's like Cyberpunk. We're a live service game, not like, you know, we're a once in a generation, you know,
and
experience like Cyberpunk was kind of pandering itself out to be.
I avoided a lot of the pre coverage of Cyberpunk because what I, you know, I see a lot of people who are like, well, you're dumb for believing the hype and you don't get to complain about Cyberpunk. And it's like, there's a lot of objective, just like jank and technical issues and like UI issues. And
yeah, like if I can't play the game, then I do have the right to complain about a game I had bought, you know,
like when there's features that are obviously missing that are still in like the text of the game or in the text of like certain, of your like abilities and whatnot. That make it apparent that the game had some differences before and no one was able to like QA that stuff. That kind of just upsets me a little bit when I paid full price.
Yeah, definitely. No, I know what you mean. And yeah, and if, you know, listeners want to look into that, like there's massive amounts of videos on YouTube from various content creators just complaining about the, you know, the whole graphical or the technical side of the drama, as well as like the internal side from the company, you know, kind of keeping people from playing the console versions and, you know, suppressing footage and things like that. So it's a whole thing you can kind of dive into.
And we'll try to share this in the show notes, but there's a great video where they took the audio of the one of the trailers, I'm assuming, just how it sounds.
Uh-huh.
They took the audio of the trailers and applied footage of like some of the funniest bugs that match what they're saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, we could definitely look that up and put that in the notes.
Yeah, I just remembered that. Yeah, we'll have to share that with everyone, because yeah, it's pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
As usually, the memes are the best thing to come out of tragedy once again.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I live for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing, aside from the PS5 stuff, which I kind of just do when I'm kind of like chilling out on my couch and high on marijuana. When I'm doing like gaming on my PC, I've been playing a game called Escape from Tarkov.
Oh.
Which is it's the biggest game on Twitch right now, because they just did like it's an early access game, but it's a survival military shooter royale kind of thing. But it's like a first person shooter where you pretty much, your objective is to go into this Eastern European country and extract as much like scavenged loot as you can, and then bring it back out and kind of rinse and repeat. It's like a looter shooter essentially. But you'll still have things like dehydration and hunger. And it's like, it's a really bare bones UI, because it's supposed to kind of represent like a degree of realism. So it's really deep and it's really deep and a high learning curve, because you'll have to do things like manually load like certain items, and you can't just hit reload and get a brand new clip. Like you have to pack everything before you go out, and if you have an empty clip and you hit reload again, it's going to just put an empty clip into your gun.
Oh.
And you'll have to like, and when you since you don't have a ammo designation on your UI, you pretty much will have to hit like alt t, and then your character will pull his mag out and then look at it and kind of give you like a rough estimate, like, oh, it's about 3/4 full or like half full. You won't get like an actual number. It's pretty nuts. I've been playing it like the last couple days, but it's like, it's super deep, where content creators will talk about it like it's an RPG, where like if you engage somebody and they've got initiative, you have to like, you know, disengage, flank from the left, and, you know, reset initiative and things like that. And there's like even massive like online spreadsheets on like damage, the damage properties of certain ammo, and It's super deep, but like it's kind of scratching like this really weird itch I have right now. So I
don't play
a lot of that. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's very brutal. Like, you're gonna die a lot and you're gonna lose a lot of items, because that's another thing. So if you die in the game, everything your character has on them, except for like a little 4-slot like pouch, which will always, you know, stay with you, everything like your guns, your backpacks, your ammo, your rigs, everything is gone. You do not get that back. And these are things that cost like thousands of like in-game dollars.
Oh, sure.
So like this actual like sense of loss makes every game like you're like white knuckling it, especially as like a new player, because you're just like, I'm gonna fucking die, I'm gonna lose everything, I have to start all over. It's almost like it's got like the same feel of like a Demon's Souls kind of thing.
Well, I was going to say that was like when Battle Royales were first coming out, like that was the most exciting part of it for me, was to just like bunkering down and like, oh my God, I'm going to die if someone comes through that door. Like, mm-hmm. There's only a few of us left and they're probably really good because they made it this far. And
yeah,
that thrill is pretty exciting. And it sounds like there's a lot more reasons to feel that way with this game, because there's so much more going on with it.
Exactly. And I mean, your main thing is to loot, and then like, You have certain extraction points around the map. So it's like you can't go to just any extraction point to just end the game. Like, you have to get good. So you're freaking out because you've had like a whole backpack full of good loot, but your extraction point's on the other side of the map. Ooh. And you can run into various other players or AI-controlled bots, and everything can kill you very easily. So you're just sort of like freaking out and just having this big sigh of relief, like once you extract and you get to take all your stuff and, you know, apply it to your stash and things like that. It's, like I said, it's scratching a real good itch for me right now.
So today we're going to be talking about episode 10 of Mobile Suit Gundam, the 8th MS team, The Shuddering Mountain Part 1. And just to get into a little bit of background about the show, it was a 12-episode OVA released from 1996 to 1999. And there were delays because the original director, Takayuki Kanda, he died in a car crash during the production of the first six episodes of the series. Now, prior to working on this show, he had directed a couple of other Sunrise Studio mecha shows like Dragonar and Dugrum. And he worked on like a Ultraman anime and a Dragon Quest anime. And I hadn't heard of either of those things getting anime adaptations. So that was that was kind of cool. Maybe something to look into down the line. But
oh, wait, the Dragon Quest anime I have seen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was like a DVD I used to like, I picked up, it was like at the old base exchange on Nellis Air Force Base.
Oh, wow.
They had a really small anime section. And yeah, one of them was the Dragon Quest anime.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's okay. It's we might watch it. Who knows?
Yeah. Hey, who can say?
Yeah. We can.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I thought that was kind of interesting though. Like a good, you know, a healthy mix of similar, you know, mecha kind of shows, but then fantasy and, you know, like superhero tokusatsu adaptation.
The Ultraman anime is definitely something I'd be totally into watching.
Yeah. I wonder if it captures the same charm of the live actionness of, mm-hmm. you know, dude in spandex lasering monsters over buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
And so for the second half of the series, Umanosuke Iida took over for that part. Some of his major past work includes working on Castle in the Sky, the Studio Ghibli movie. He worked on some Devilman OVAs, and then after 8th MS team, he also worked in different capacities on just random episodes of Cowboy Bebop, Gao Gaigar, Van Dredd, and Yukikaze, amongst others. So kind of a diverse amount of work there as well. But you know, it seems like he worked with Sunrise a bunch and with Gonzo.
Yeah. Oh, well, so one of the things I was looking into is that. Aside from them on staff, there was Toshihiro Kawamoto, who was the character designer for a lot of Sunrise stuff, was obviously the character designer for Cowboy Bebop. And you can kind of tell from 8th MS team that they've got that same kind of look where it's like really sharp, but like not giant eyes kind of designs.
A lot of the hair and like the nose and stuff. Yeah, definitely so, that vibe.
Yeah, that's why they all kind of look like Cowboy Bebop characters. And I think he also did, I want to say Char's Counterattack and 0080.
Oh, okay.
He also did that. So yeah, it's, you know, there's some cross-pollination because, I mean, they're both Sunrise projects, but, you know, there's some Cowboy Bebop influences on the characters as well.
That's pretty cool because I hadn't thought of it this way, but you can tell, like, in Char's Counterattack how the designs are a little more subdued from the original, you know, like the characters that appear in the original Gundam look, it's not just that they, you know, they're older, but they, their designs are a little bit more like what would become Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
Huh. That's a cool. Yeah. That fully makes sense. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. The hair is definitely like, when I was looking at, certain characters that we'll go over later who say really pervy things. I was like, that's fucking Cowboy Bebop hair. 100%.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So, and you know, so speaking of, you know, like the original Gundam, so this series takes place kind of concurrent with the beginning of, or I don't know, for a good portion of the original Gundam TV series, but it's in another theater of war between the Zeon and the Earth Federation. Mm-hmm. it's on the, so in contrast with the original, like this is on the ground. It's all like, for the most part, it's on Earth in like Southeast Asia. Very much more of like a ground war, guerrilla war sort of feel versus, the
more space of the, opera.
Yeah. The dramatic space opera. So the whole background of this is this, they're this team that's, you know, amongst other units in the area, they're trying to stop this big crazy Xeon super weapon from launching or from, you know, going into operation. It's almost like if you're a Star Wars fan, like this show is the Rogue One, right? That was the movie.
Yeah, Rogue One.
It's the Rogue One and the Gundam movie trilogy, or the original TV series, are the original trilogy of Star Wars. So like one of them is about like all the nasty shit that happens in the war, and the other one is about fancy lads with daddy issues and superpowers. Like the parallels it's like, are
yeah, it's are right like, it's there. A Full Metal Jacket Universal Century. But it is interesting because like you said, it's you don't see all these like stuffy officers in their, you know, specific command centers. It's like really shitty base camps, and everyone's just sort of like sweating from the heat because they're in a fucking jungle.
Yeah,
and it's great. Like it's such a breath of fresh air for Gundam. I think
like we're gonna touch on it in a moment, but there's a little bit in the intro where one of the characters is getting their lunch, and it's like raining, and the, you know, the second they grab their tray and like step out, their lunch gets rained on. Like they're you know, it's like, that's not going to happen in any of the other Gundam series because everything's too fancy boy, you know, too shiny, too cool, too state of the art. And they're all in, you know, it sounds weird to say it, but they're all in the comfort of like state of the art spaceships.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Cause it's like, we'll see later in this episode, it's like tactics that you have to adapt to when you're fighting other mobile suits, because those mobile suits all have a nuclear reactor in them and you're in a densely populated area. It's like, In normal Gundam, you're all in space and everyone just becomes like these glowing circles. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a reality you kind of face like in the quote unquote, like, you know, real world of like Earth.
And so like another thing I kind of noted watching this was that it was sort of similar in a lot of ways to Gundam 0080, which I think it came out in the early 90s, that
0080, like War in the Pocket, I think is like mid 80s.
Okay, I might be thinking of 0083 then, coming out a little bit later. But it's kind of more of a grounded, you know, smaller scale story. It's not about something that could change the course of the war necessarily. Like they're helping, but at the end of the day, the like super weapon they're trying to stop, like Amuro could probably get around to it eventually plot wise. But so this is still like a little bit of a bigger scale than 0080, but it's still just more of like a personal story between a few people.
Yes. And also, yeah, so 0080 happened in 89, 0083 is 91.
Okay. So yeah. Like a little bit of a gap there.
Mm-hmm.
So Eric, did you watch this in before the episode?
Yeah, this has been since I first saw it air on Toonami. Since then, this has been my favorite Gundam series, and it's the one I kind of recommend to everybody who is, you know, once they've experienced Gundam Wing and they're kind of looking for what else the Gundam franchise offers. If we're going into the UC, I will usually go for letting them know about this because it's like it's an encapsulized story. It's only 12 episodes long and it's very digestible.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Cause I think if you want to get someone into UC, as much as I love it, I do think the original Gundam is a bit of a hard sell in the year of our Lord 2020, just animation wise, pacing wise, whether it's the movies or the series. I think you have to hook someone first and then they'll be able to watch those with that appreciation for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. This has always been just a standout for me. And I think that it's because it's such a drastic change from the, you know, the space opera that is the original series and the accompanying other shows. Like it's just that much more memorable to me. And I think it stands out so much because of that.
Yeah, so I caught this on Cartoon Network as well, and I don't quite remember where it stood in terms of airing after Gundam Wing or 0079 or any of those. I know I think it was like a couple of years after Gundam Wing.
I think after the run of Gundam Wing, it was just they were kind of like, okay, well, we need to figure out what else we're gonna put, and let's throw everything we have that is Gundam at the audience now.
Give them something, anything.
Yeah.
And so I do remember seeing it there. I was really impressed with how different it was. Even being a little more familiar with Gundam by then. I would say it's definitely like a top five for me.
It's gritty, man. Like that's what's so, it's so gritty.
It's so gritty. It's so, I wish there were more shows of, you know, more mecha shows like this, like more modern mecha shows, I should say. I feel like there were a lot of these kinds of shows made in the 80s that never made it to America. And that's unfortunate, but you know, most mecha shows are either more realistic than 8th MS Team, or then they're the like space opera, psychic fancy boy, get in the robot, you know, kind of stuff. So it fills a really cool niche between, I mean, it's not even in the middle of anything. It's like three quarters of the way into like military realism, but it's a really cool spot to occupy.
Yeah. And as gritty as we say this is, there are still a number of parts of this show that I, coming back to it after a number of years, I just made me laugh out loud of just kind of how ludicrous it is at times. Oh, yeah. So, you know,
yeah, it doesn't it's take still an anime.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So the OP for this episode or for this series is Shine in the Storm by Chihiro Yunekura. It's your energetic J-pop song. I wouldn't say it's a banger for sure. But you know, I think because this anime has like a special place in my heart, I kind of always liked it. You know, you see a lot of the tools of war mixed with like cigarettes and, you know, kind of, it's kind of big. It's kind of Vietnam-esque tone to it. So it's like real base camp. It's dirty. It's not shiny. There's not people floating around.
I'm realizing now that I didn't even know is the logo of the show almost has that like stencil
stamped on military. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even that, you know, it's like the first thing we see is that logo. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it does look like that.
Yeah. It's got like, even the logo, it's government issue. Like it's got that sort of like mass produced stamped on look to it because I mean, the main Gundams in this are the RX-79, which is sort of like the mass production model of the RX-78. Cause that was always the prototype. And I always liked that because it's always like, It's a Gundam, but it's sort of designed for like the regular infantry kind of officer. So it's like everyone can use it. It's just like an idiot-proof Gundam that they have. And it's very like utilitarian in its look compared to like, you know, the fancy white shining robot samurai that the RX-78 is.
Right. They sanded down the edges a little bit. They source the parts cheaper, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like you could see that kind of.
And they swap parts out too, which is great.
Right, right.
You do see you mentioned this in your notes and when we talked about it earlier. I think this is the first time I've seen in Gundam, or the one time that I can remember, is you've got like mobile suits on the ground and then ground troops like running alongside them with like machine guns and stuff.
Right.
And that doesn't read as Gundam to me in my head when I think about it.
Yeah, I never, other than like Gundam media that was made after this series, I don't think you see that ever. It's a big departure. I know one of the, I think it's like Gundam Battle Operation, I want to say, plays a little bit like a jankier battlefield with Gundams. And so you're on foot a lot, or you might take a tank, or you might take a truck or something, I think.
What system is this for?
I know it's on PS4. I think the original might be on PC, and maybe Battle Operation 2 is on PC. But
a battlefield with Gundams sounds fucking awesome.
It's it may be a taste thing. It never clicked with me as much as that formula is very much something I would love. So maybe I just need to give it another shot. But yeah, like, that's the main thing that I can think of that has had that feel of just like, oh yeah, there's dudes on the ground, but there's also like mobile suits running around in the, you know, in the city or in the desert or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And also you kind of get like during that, and it kind of is mimicked in the ending theme. You've got like sort of a documentary feel to it. So it's sort of like I said, going back to it, it's like Full Metal Jacket. It's somebody kind of chronicling their time during the 1 year war.
Yeah. Cause there's like a part where it's like at an angle, it's almost like a Ken Burns documentary sort of thing where it's like a little like grayed out photo from the battlefield. And it's like at an angle.
Yeah, definitely.
I would love a fake Ken Burns Gundam documentary.
So as we get into the Jorge, what did you think of the OP? Did you like it?
Yeah, it's a fun, you know, fun J-pop song, and it's of its era. I wouldn't say it's one of my top Gundam opening things. That might be. But it's it's definitely not one of my like top 3 or 4, but it's good. I always,
it's an OP.
It sure, it does its job. I don't know, I always got a kick out of it playing the like Super Robot Wars games when you'd use like the EZ-8 or one of the other 8th MS Gundams. It always felt like a good like battle music ever so slightly. So
I think it's fine. It's just, it's never been a song that I've put onto a, you know, a burned CD in the early 2000s. So
it has some stiff competition amongst the other Gundam.
There's not a lot openings of space on those CDs.
No.
So we jump into the episode, and to give a little background on the situation, Zeon has been pushed to a mountain base after a series of victories by the Feddies, because they've got them kind of grouped in. You're kind of seeing in progress they think they're gonna surrender this base, but little does the Federation know that they've got a killing machine here. So we see a ton of core fighters bombing Zaku's from the mountains. And it's like, it does sort of kind of give you that feeling of the original Gundam series, but with like this updated like 1996 animation style.
Yeah, because those core fighters look like toys, and
they're supposed to, because you're supposed to buy them.
And they still look like toys in this, but they look a little more reasonably like military hardware. But
yeah. And then we see Norris Packard, air horns, coolest guy in the show, and his Gauf. Okay, so I always called it a Gauf, just because there's a U in the name, but he calls it a goof, which might be the correct way to say it.
And
I'm going to keep calling it a Gauf.
And I swear, like, both of those plus goof, like, have been used in dubs throughout time. So I feel like there's just no wrong way to say it.
Yeah. His Gauf is a special blue mobile suit that sort of has like these, I guess, It looks like a Zaku, but it's got more of a like a metal aesthetic to it. It's got like horns kind of sticking out of its shoulders, and it's got a more of a medieval looking shield with a chain gun attached to it.
Right. It's a cool update on the, because like the original Goof, like, it, God, we're gonna annoy the hell out of everyone saying,
no, it's fine. You call it Goof, otherwise. I'll call it Gauf, whatever.
But yeah, like it's a cool update on the original, because like the original did just look like a meaner Zaku.
Yeah, exactly.
But this thing, yeah, you're right. You're very apt to call it like metal. Like, it just all like the detailing and the metal work of the robot looks so just like brutal.
It's so intimidating, and it's like, and obviously like a blue mobile suit should look silly, but like, once you get further into the episode and you see what Norris can do with this Gauf, like, it's just, it's so good. And if you guys have been on Tumblr, on anime Tumblr within the last 10 years, you've probably seen a GIF of this. So you probably already know what it looks like if you haven't seen it already. But yeah, it's so good. It's one of my favorite mobile suits. I think that and like the Camphor from War in the Pocket is probably, those are like my two favorite non-Gundam mobile suits.
Another blue boy.
Yeah, another, maybe I just like blue. You know what? I like the V8 from Gundam Wing too, with a big cannon. I think I just like blue mobile suits.
You just like blue mobile suits with one eye, with cool weapons, yeah.
Holy shit, dude. We found my kink.
It's a brand.
Yeah, that's my brand. I'm going to go spend $100 on models now on those three.
Don't tell me what you do after you build them.
You ever see what hot gluing is? anyways, so Michael, is it Michelle or is it Michael?
I think there were, so I watched the dub. I think it said Michelle.
Is it Michelle?
Mikkel, sorry.
Oh, I think it is Mikkel, you're right.
Yeah.
From the 8th MS team, he tracks down the Zeons in their command center. And as you kind of see, Zeon is sort of getting ready to evacuate the base. And you kind of get like a little tidbit from like the higher ups at the base that they want to set off like a nuclear explosion. Whether or not, you don't really see it in this episode, but it's just kind of interesting to see that, you know, one of the higher ups is like, hey, I don't think that's a good idea. And he's like, no, we're going to fucking do it. So, you know, you kind of got like a little bit of the political intrigue of Gundam, or that Gundam is known for there.
No side is truly good or truly bad or truly noble or truly schemey. Everyone just sucks.
Yeah, it's all shades of gray. Mm-hmm. But Norris, who is sort of like the paragon of like a soldier, he is not happy with this, and he kind of knows that the higher ups at the base are really kind of incompetent leaders. So as they're retreating, Norris is assuring other Zeon guys that the Absalus is nearly complete, and they're going to be, you know, they might be on their back heels right now, but you know, everything's going to end up fine anyways. But even though personally, he's kind of got some reservations about the whole situation.
So, in the city, we see this Zaku that's about to sneak up on a gun tank. Now just to contextualize this for people who aren't Gundam obsessives like us, like the Zakus are kind of the grunt mass produced mobile suit of the whole Universal Century Gundam series. So they're just like these green baddie looking robots with one eye. And the gun tank then is it's got an upper body that's like a mobile suit, and it has tank treads on the bottom. So it's kind of like a halfway in between.
It looks like Johnny Five.
It looks like Johnny Five, and it is quite alive. So, so yes. So this Zaku is about to sneak up on the gun tank, and Shiro, our protagonist, just like murks him from out of cover, from around a building with his mobile suit, the EZ-8, which I think is technically a Gundam, right? Even though it doesn't have the fin,
I think in terms of the hierarchy, I think the EZ-8s are like officer mobile suits.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong though, but I think you only see the EZ-8s being kind of run by the field commanders.
Right. Yeah. They're like a, well, and I think Shiro's EZ-8 is specifically like spare parts.
Oh yeah. It's just patched. The EZ-8 head on top of his Gundam.
Yeah. Well, I think the whole thing is like spare parts, like rebuilt around his Gundam, or there's some little like nook like that where this is really just like
pedantry.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But so it's just kind of interesting because it's like a almost like a beige or cream color with like navy undertones like underneath. Mm-hmm. But it's a very like non-standard looking Gundam, and yeah. Really stands out. Very much of its series, because it's just like a almost like a field upgrade kind of thing. Like they're like, well, yeah, we need something. So which speaking of like a field upgrade, so next we see one of the other 8th MS team members, Karen, her Gundam's head got blown off in a previous episode, so she just has an entire other mobile suit's head on, like a GM, which looks very different than a Gundam. It's even a different color. Mm-hmm. So it's very cool. They're just fighting with like what they have and like surviving and moving on from battlefield to battlefield.
Yeah, so, exactly. It's like everything's piecemeal, everything's patched together.
Yeah, it's very I love it. It's so different.
It's got so much charm.
There's no like reset at the end of the episode. It's kind of like, oh shit, we lost this stuff. We need to.
Yeah, you can't like retreat to like your Star Destroyer and where you've got like teams of mechanics like bringing you back up to like perfect field operation.
You have a million Gundam heads just waiting to
pop
back on.
And those are taxpayer dollars at work.
You work with what we give you, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, so we see this Dom, which is like I don't know, it's like a thick boy mobile suit. has like hover legs. They're really cool looking. I think.
I'm not a fan of the Doms.
I like them. They're pretty cool. They like zip around. They hover really fast.
Yeah,
they got
the legs. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're wearing bell bottoms. I think that's what does it for me. Is that they're wearing bell bottoms.
So they're the funkiest mobile suit.
True.
And one of them kind of like overwhelms Karen in her GM head Gundam, but a gun tank kind of rolls out and makes a save for her. And so we go back over to the Zeon underground base, and Norris realizes like he hasn't really fully secured this escape because there's still enough Federation officers out in the city. So he decides he's going to be the one to go back out and make time for the escape. Because again, he's that honorable archetype of the soldier who's like, you know, putting his life on the line for the cause that he really believes in, even if he doesn't think that the people ranking above him are all that competent.
Yeah, it's duty is his main, his main driving force.
Yeah, like this guy was born to be a martyr, basically.
Dude,
for his
rules,
size.
Man.
He's
fucking
great.
Rules.
I love all the a lot of the Gundam series have this archetype or a similar character, and I love all of them because it's always the bad guy that you're just kind of like, oh, I wish he was on the other side.
Yeah, you're just rooting for him.
Mm-hmm. So Norris and Aina, she's the love interest of Shiro. They're on opposite sides, and
she's the Juliet of this story of star-crossed lovers.
Yeah, like you can fill the blanks in of like the drama here because there's only so many ways it goes when you're on opposite sides of the war and you're in love. But they sit down, they have this conversation about like Norris can tell that she's kind of preoccupied, she has feelings for somebody. And that's obviously been on her mind a lot lately. And he has like this like tender moment for, you know, especially for who he is. And he opens up that, yeah, like when he was younger, he wasn't always like this tough soldier type. Like he once had feelings like that in his earlier days and, you know, all this. And Aina calls him, you know, says that basically like he's a father figure to her and how much she appreciates him. And in his mind, this just reinforces how much he has to defend this escape to make sure that they make it out of there. And so we see this kind of cool thing, and I think it's another thing we haven't seen much in Gundam up until this point, but he's dramatically like walking aside his goof like to the elevator, like his mobile suit's walking while he's walking alongside it to get back into the battlefield.
Did you think this was cool? Let me ask you that.
I thought it was really cool.
Because I laughed at it, and in my notes I'm just like, yeah, it looks cool for this 2 second frame that you see, but like in reality, he's gonna have to start running after his fucking Galf because, like, you know, it's got a much longer stride than a man.
Right. Or he's gonna have to keep waiting for it if it's like there's no way those two are keeping up in sync. Like,
exactly.
At all. Yeah. No, I did think about I thought it looked cool, but I, you know, same kind of wavelength. I was like, it's a good thing they only showed that moment, and then he gets picked up because. Yeah.
But what's also great in this scene is that, like, that just kind of reinforces that Norris is a cool character, is that it's not like he's, like, in other anime, he's not, like, creepily in love with Aina. Like, you know, what you I think you would see in some certain types of animes. But it's like, yeah, he thinks of this girl as, like, a daughter. Right. And he's like now gonna like ensure that she is safe, like as her father figure. It's
right.
Beautiful, man.
Right, yeah. He's, you know, I think the implication there, you know, kind of being like he could have had a life where he could have had a daughter like this, and he didn't, but he does. He actually does, because it's Ina.
Yeah. The implication.
The implications there. Yeah, very, just Norris Packard, you know, great villain, great. Villain of the year for me, I would say.
Great anti-hero. I would.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's definitely that. Oh God, the Star Trek thing. The like, you know, if we had been born in another world, we could have been friends.
I would have called you friend.
Yeah.
Wow, we're really dorky.
Oh, we love all the wonderful pieces of media.
Uh huh.
So over back in the city, we see the Athamas team. They're getting into position to wait for orders as you know, as Norris is making his way, and I got a lot of I would say this sequence takes more inspiration from obviously from like action movies, but I got the first of like a couple of little like horror movie vibes from this sequence. Elador, mm-hmm. one of the guys in like their command truck thing. He's tracking sounds underground, and he, you know, with the base being underground, like the elevator's making a ton of noise and the goof's coming, and he's just kind of like, something's coming, like something's on its way. And it like catches everyone off guard. And, it just, I don't know, it felt very like suspenseful, like kind of like an 80s horror movie where they know something's coming, but they're like not prepared.
It's like a Jaws kind of vibe, or like,
yeah,
you know, it's like the calm before the storm.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like you're locked in the room, but then you hear like the footsteps coming up or something like that, or you're in the closet and you know, you you see a claw or whatever.
Yeah.
So everyone gets caught off guard as the guy springs into the air onto this building, and he does kind of like this iconic cool pose against the sun as he's scanning the area. And you know, little does she know, but Karen says that, you know, it's almost like she's offended that they only sent one unit after her, because, you know, they're so good and awesome, but little do they know.
Yeah, Norris is going to shut her up real quick, even though, you know, Karen, I think Karen is the best girl, so.
Oh, yeah, she's great. I mean, she's justified up until this point, because they haven't seen him in action much, so, yeah.
Yeah. So, my cat's jumping on my lap. Okay. So we're about maybe like 10 minutes into the episode. The next 15 minutes is just essentially like one giant fight. And it's probably, like I said, it's probably one of the best episodes of the series. But it starts off and you kind of already start to begin to see how Norris really is an ace. And he's like on another level from everybody else. He uses his grappling cable to attach to a water tank on top of this building. And then jump down through the hollowed out building and attack a gun tank below him. As this is happening, Terry is trying to use his onboard systems to kind of calculate where Norris is going to be. But you know, as we see, Norris has already kind of anticipated this and stops early because of that grappling cable and that water tank. And then he just starts to rain, you know, chain gun fire onto that gun tank below. And
which,
I wrote
which,
it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was just, you know, I'm writing my notes as I'm watching this. I'm just, Norris is making you all look like fools. Because everyone's so like, you know, like, oh, I'll get this guy. Or, oh, it's just one guy. And he's just, no. He's that one guy you don't want to fuck with.
Right. Like I was going to say, it's a good example. Cause I love in, you know, in stories like this, when everyone's competent. So it's not just like sheer luck or stupidity that makes someone win or lose. But with Norris, you don't have to be like, being competent isn't enough. You have to be excellent or like push past that 100%, because yeah, he's just too good at that. Because Terry, you know, that could have worked on anyone else. That was a smart plan, but that's not enough for Norris.
You're not playing 36-dimensional chess like Norris Packard is. But yeah, so it's when this happens and he starts to try to systematically take out their defenses. He kind of, they're like, oh shit, this guy is, he's an ace. And so they kind of need to kind of rethink their plans. So they start doing things like using smoke for cover, so Nora starts doing things like using smoke for cover, systematically disabling Karen and killing another gun tank. And this is that gif that you've probably seen if you're on anime Tumblr. It's the Gauf he's not using a beam weapon, he's just using a giant scimitar to just stab the head of this gun tank, and like blood, oil just kind of splats all over the head of the Gauf.
It's so good.
It's so well animated, and it's such a money shot. Like, it's so good. And I still see this gif on websites today. Like, it's famous for a reason.
It's from an animation standpoint, it's such an indulgent little moment, because it lasts so, like, you know, for being such a quick cutting scene, or, you know, quick cutting scene, like, that lasts so much longer than it has to, but it's perfect that way.
Yeah, like you like you said, you don't need it in the animation, especially if you're in an animation studio where you're cutting corners. Like, Sunrise took the time, and it's very, like, indulgent. It's such an indulgent shot, and I think it paid off for him, because it's like this gift that we're still talking about, like, 20 years after the anime came out. So afterwards, you know, you kind of see just Nora's continue to kind of play with everybody. He's using his speed to dodge people, and he's kind of using the environment around him. And as we kind of get this battle, as it starts to pan out, we kind of get a look at the Zeon side of things. The Absolus has just been completed. And so, which is their giant super weapon that you'll see later in the episode. And Guineas, who is he's like a scientist, right? Technically? Or he's like because he's not just like an aristocrat like all the other high ranking guys are, is he?
Right. He's a scientist. I just think that's just like the standard uniform past like a certain rank or whatever in Zeon, is you look like a fancy
just
lad.
Just start looking like a duke. Yeah, so they've completed the Absolus, which is like the giant war weapon, and Guineas, you know, he's having a toast with his science team, and he pulls like a real like Ozymandias move, and he turns out that the champagne that he's celebrating it with everybody is poisoned, because he's just, you know, kind of taking full control of this giant death machine, and
never trust open bar.
Never trust open bar, you know, never take drinks from strangers or people that, you know, might have reason to kill you. So, you know, just a little PSA for you guys. So, the Gauf, we flash back to the Gauf fight, and over a highway overpass, you know, he's kind of standing over Shiro, and he's kind of telling him, like, hey man, you're kind of in over your head here. And it's true. Shiro is like an ensign. He's probably been in the Federation for like a couple years. And, you know, you kind of see that Norris is this guy who's had, you know, he's probably been in battles longer than Shiro's been in the entire force.
Yeah, like he's battle hardened. Shiro, I mean, I can't wrap my mind around a lot of like military, like, ranking and like experience and whatnot, but Shiro kind of came from more of a like scholarly or like paper pushy kind of background, right? And he was assigned to this.
Like he's that war trope where it's like that college student who's like now the leader of a squad of like, you know, enlisted guys.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Cause I mean, yeah, he's an ensign, so that's the first rank you get as an officer. So he's probably like fresh out of college.
Right, because he was assigned to the team like earlier, you know, in the series or whatever. Like this was his assignment. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was correct in that was my assumption, sort of, or like my interpretation. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah, it's definitely I think Norris is, they say he's like a commander or something. So yeah, he's probably had like years in Zeon's army. So as they kind of engage with each other, Shiro's like dodging a bit. He is trying to spray the area down with machine gun fire, but it, you know, he's just spraying. It's not really doing anything. And so, you know, Norris is like, that looked impressive, but it didn't do anything.
I love the call out.
Yeah. He's just like, all right, kid, whatever.
Looks like your fancy books didn't do much for you, Shiro.
Yeah. You fancy college boy, huh? And so, you know, Norris's real objective is to destroy all the gun tanks because that's the only thing that could probably shoot down the, you know, the Amphibus. And so, you know, Shiro's kind of wise to that. So he kind of jumps in the way and with his shield kind of like blocks the fire coming in. And at this point, you know, they're kind of the battle kind of starts to move in towards its end phases. And Norris is like, you know what? I think I'm going to die here. I think I'm ready to die. Which I thought was kind of stupid because I'm like, I'm pretty sure Norris, if he just took like 10 more minutes, he probably could have cleared away all the gun tanks and then probably the rest of the 8th MS team. But he just wants to kind of go out, you know?
I think he was he's just a weary man who wanted to go out in a blaze of glory and in battle. You know, he didn't want to die peacefully in his sleep. He wanted the glory of battle.
Yeah, he found his honorable death, I guess. And so he launches a signal flare, a red signal flare, which at the base, Ina's just kind of chilling, waiting to hear back from Norris. And we didn't talk about it earlier, but there's a scene after Norris leaves, like, Ina gets mad. She's like, hey, don't let anything happen to Norris. Like, if anything happens to Norris, I'm going to kill whoever kills him.
Right, right.
Like, she kind of has this weird kind of, like this weird spiteful motion.
Yeah, because she feels it would be on her, you know, for him to basically, like, step out into his own death. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. like, she swears that she'll, yeah.
She's going to avenge his death.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets news from a grunt that Commander Norris has sent a red flare, which means, like, go without me, I'm not coming back. And so she orders, you know, the launch. And we cut back to Guineas, who's, after he's killed his whole science team, he just leaves, like, a grenade on a cocktail glass and walks out. And it made me laugh because he does this thing where he like, walks into a hallway and then behind him, you know, the room explodes. But you don't see that, like, if you stayed on this any longer or you knew how explosions work, it would just, like, roast him because the fire that comes out of this room is just gigantic. It's like backdraft.
Right, right. And, like, I had a similar thought, too, because I don't know if I'm confusing, like, real science with, like, sci-fi tropes or whatever, but wouldn't, like, the oxygen in that hallway also be, like, burnt out or consumed with an explosion that big?
I mean, yeah, or even just, like, the shockwave in general. Like,
it would
just
yeah.
be, you know, that
grenade. So it's a huge explosion.
It's gigantic. And he's, you know, nonplussed because he's an anime character. But, yeah, so many moments in this episode made me laugh, and they all kind of revolve around Guineas because he's such a bloated caricature of, like, a cool anime villain that I can't take him seriously.
Like he's the, you know, Western comic book mad scientist crossed over with a bunch of anime tropes.
With, like, a hot anime guy.
Right.
Yeah, it's like if Dr. Doom was a hot anime boy, like, that's this guy.
Oh, somebody's got to connect you with Marvel, because I think we just stumbled on $1 million.
A hot new storyline on our hands.
But
Victor Von Doom, but he's hot.
But Doom-san.
Mm-hmm.
So, back in the city, we have the Easy Eight and the GIF continue to dodge each other's blows. And just as this is happening, Shiro runs out of ammo and he's trying to reload, but he doesn't even get a chance because Norris launches his, like, shock cable grappling hook thing at his mobile suit's left arm and disables it with a shockwave, just kind of leaving it limp. So he can't even reach over to grab an ammo pack. Mm-hmm. Just as Shiro is coping and dealing with this,
he kind of has, like, a mental breakdown.
Yeah. Like, he's so overwhelmed. He just can't even process. Like, this is a lot. I mean, again, maybe, you know, maybe going back to the whole thing of, like, yeah, he's like, book smart and like educated, but he's barely had any time out in the field. He doesn't know how to, you know, you can't study your way into reacting to this kind of, you know, sudden like shock.
Yeah. And there are so many weird moments too. Like, it's like we'll talk about this as it kind of keeps going on, cause it continues to happen. But like, there's a scene that happens like after, Shiro gives command of the team over to, Elendor. And Elendor's like, all right, cool. I get to lead the team. And then like the next scene over, he's just like chilling in his seat again. Like he's like, you know, not even really paying attention. He's just really like laid back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, dude, what the fuck? Like you're like in lead of the team now. You're supposed to like hear where everything is to kind of tell everybody what's going on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
He just decided to vibe.
I guess. I mean, when you look like an anime Axl Rose, you can't help but vibe.
So he's already kind of freaking out, Shiro, and as Norris leaps into the air and shocks it his mobile suit even more, directly impacting the cockpit and disabling the monitors and all that, and it leaves Shiro in the dark. Shiro starts kind of panicking. He's trying to find the like circuit to reset everything, and I took this as like an intentional like disrespect at Shiro, but he fires the machine gun to spook Shiro, right? To keep him in fear. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely just fucking with his head.
And so he just Shiro just kind of shudders, like he thinks he's that's it. This is like he's gonna die. And no, it's just Norris firing off the machine gun because Shiro is in complete dark. There's no with Gundam, like there's no, they're not looking out a window in their cockpit, at least in, you know, in this series. It's a bunch of monitors that simulate like what's around them, and those are off, so he's just in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And even Shiro is just like yelling out, he's like, just kill me already, like take me out of my misery, you know, that kind of thing. And so also kind of like a badass like in the shit moment, but Norris grabs the disabled EZ-8 and uses it as cover while he's reloading.
Fuck yes, it's so cool.
It's so awesome.
It's so good.
Or at first he's behind it to reload, but then he grabs it and holds it up almost like a hostage sort of.
It's like a human shield. It's so good.
It's so like you don't see this
Mwah.
Stuff.
Chef's kit.
Oh, yeah. Like, I feel like all of our gushing about like Norris Packard, we need to come up with like some kind of like award or whatever whenever we're gushing about a villain.
The Norris Packard Award. We should do that. Let's fucking add that. Like, I'm writing that down right now.
We're coming up. Yeah. And so he's using the EZ-8 as like a hostage, basically as a human shield. Shiro starts breaking down further. He's like really rethinking like his priorities and his whole like, you know,
he's like, do I even like my friends?
Yeah,
he's like, do I even give a shit about them?
Am I really about the team, or am I really about like just wanting to live? And so
am I really about that action?
So he, you know, in this he manages to finally like reboot his mobile suit and kick the GIF away. His arm is still, the left arm is still like disabled. So he tears it off with the right arm and, starts using it as a melee weapon, which is another badass mm-hmm. GIF I've seen a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And he's like shouting, he's like, I'm going to live. I'm going to marry Aina. And this is when Norris realizes that who Shiro is and that he's Aina's love. And it all kind of clicks for him here.
And so at this moment too, like, when he does this, because it's like Shiro's freaking the fuck out, and like Michelle and like the other characters are just like, they're like, oh, he's gone crazy, ha 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 ha, and it's like, yeah, you guys are in the middle of a fucking battle right now, like,
yeah, it's life or death,
asses kicked, like
this guy ain't playing around,
don't fucking goof it off, like, yeah, it was just, that was another thing I was just like, that's, the tone shifts in this are very weird.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit, and I don't think they. I mean, we'll get to this more towards later, but it was a sudden odd jump of like, Aina being his, like, it makes sense, but it was just paced oddly that he's like, oh no, I'm gonna stop freaking out because I have a reason to live.
Yeah.
But it was just paced oddly. And so, but yeah, so Norris realizes like what this, you know, what this means, who, you know, what his connection is to his life. Then meanwhile, the Apsolus and a couple of like flight type Zakus, launch from the mountain lair, and, the Apsolus blasts a bunch of like cannon fodder, GM mobile suits. And he has this like, this pervy, like, he's like, oh yeah.
It wasn't even that enthusiastic. Like, it was just like to himself, just, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a weird little thing.
I mean, they really nailed the delivery of like, he couldn't not say, oh yeah. Like, it was just instinctual, like, oh, a bunch of dudes blowing up in robots. Oh yeah. Like,
I just killed a bunch of men with families. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 I feel like, I mean, we have the Chad Norris Packard and the Virgin.
The Virgin Gideous. Incel. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
there's definitely a dichotomy in play here.
I get to work on MS Paint and I'll get that made up.
Let's get this going. So cutting back to the battlefield, we have the EZ-8 and the Guff. They're, you know, they're face to face. They have their respective swords out. You know, the badass metal scimitar that Norris has, and the beam saber that Shiro does, and they both charge, and it's that typical sort of like samurai movie, like slicing at each other sort of thing. Shiro slices the Guff in half, but Norris's aim was perfect, because instead of actually really having his sword out, he had the handgun side out, and he blasts a gun tank that was behind where Shiro was. It's a really cool like cut and reveal sort of thing where Shiro realizes like he won, but he failed at his objective. Like,
Shiro was never going. It was never the main target. It was always the gun tanks. And even though he died, like, he still kind of won the engagement.
Even not getting played, he got played. Like,
yeah,
it's such a great moment. It's such a great, like, I mean, Norris goes out. His objective is complete. He protected the evacuation. He got that last final gun tank. Shiro made it out with his life, but like, at what cost? And he just sits there, you know, the Apsolus soars over the city.
He salutes Norris's Gundam too. Like, after he gets out, like, he gets out of his cockpit and he's like, salutes like Norris's like destroyed Galf.
Right. Yeah. Like, he comes out, he salutes it. But he's just broken and exhausted and just terrible right now. And he just announces to his team that he's leaving the service. And yeah. we just end on that.
Yeah, we just get the cut to credits or cut to OP.
Yeah. And then that ending theme is 10 years after, also by Chihiro Yonikura. This one was more of a like documentary home movie feel. Also, it's like a camera pointing at Shiro reading a book, like on some time off in the at the base. But then characters passing by in front of him and behind him and stuff, just funny little, cute little like character moments.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really pleasant. It's fine. It's not a banger, but it's all right.
Yeah. The song is pretty forgettable. I mean, I can't think of it, but, you know,
I was struggling cause I'm usually pretty good at remembering the titles, but I could not remember the title of it until it was getting to the chorus part where they say 10 years after. I was like, oh yeah, that's what it's called. Okay.
Right. It's no real folk blues, but, no. You know, it's fine.
But what is?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's our episode. Eric, what did you think overall?
It was great. It was it's a great series. It's a great episode of a great series. So, you know, it's you really can't complain about it, and it's probably, you know, it's an appropriate climax to a story, which, you know, the whole series is.
Yeah, no, I agree, like, but, you know, both in terms of this episode and the series, like, they're both great. Not I thought it was cool. Like, not a lot of things happen, like, event-wise. Like, really, it's two things. It's Norris covering the escape and Guineas taking, like, full control over his project. Mm-hmm. But those are the climaxes of those two storylines, and those are super important. But yeah, I mean, it's a great wrap-up of those plot points, and then nearly 20 minutes or whatever of an awesome fight scene.
Yeah, it's really... I mean, there's nothing much I can gush about, because, like you said, it's a fairly simple episode in terms of plot, but it's like there's so much that happens with the characters, and it's done so well that it's like everything that needs to be said is already said in the show.
Yeah. And it makes you into a Norris Packard fanboy. This episode has radicalized many into Zeon sympathists.
Look. The Zeonic Federation did nothing wrong, except try to drop a colony on people.
But I mean, we all make mistakes. That's why pencils have erasers. All right.
Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect.
Who out of us has not exploded Australia in our youth? I mean, come on, come on, people.
Yeah, the first without sin, cast the first stone.
drop the first colony.
Stupid.
Yeah, so I did look a little bit into what legacy this particular show had. I mean, it's impossible other than some of like the like alternate universe Gundams, like it's hard to separate the legacy Gundam overall has had from the individual shows, because it is all just one big machine. But it did
unintended.
Yeah. But 8th MS did have a compilation movie come out a year or so after its release. It was called Miller's Report, and it had some footage mixed in of like Shiro being court-martialed, and like it's a whole thing to do with like
the spoilers. Yeah.
Yeah, like with his romance with Aina and the series and all that. I would still say, just like talking to other anime fans and Gundam fans overall, like it's still beloved. Like people didn't turn around and realize like, oh, that was so cheesy, I used to have bad taste. No, like this was just awesome. Like people still talk highly of it. And that, you know, like we've been saying, that battle sequence is still held up as such a like ideal like mecha fight. Like it's still immortalized in a lot of like animated GIFs on Tumblr and like Twitter and stuff. So it's alive and well. It lives in our hearts.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's great. I think it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's like the best anime fight or mecha fight, but it's definitely in the, you know, top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I would say it's like an unideal mecha fight, but it may not be the best one, but it's, I mean, not only is it close to up there, it's just not flawed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly.
So... I mean, I think we know, but like, would you say, we touched on it, like you did say you would recommend it, and that it held up for you.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It held up. I mean, obviously like watching it as an adult now and kind of being more keen towards like schlocky writing and schlocky delivery. It's definitely funnier in some parts, and, you know, it's definitely more noticeable as a 34-year-old man, but you know, it's still great. The episode is wonderful. Like the episode's wonderful and the series is wonderful, and I recommend it to everybody I talk to about mecha anime. So what about you?
Absolutely. I don't think anything has changed opinion wise for me. I did probably watch it again a little more recently than you did, so my opinion didn't change much from, you know, like 3 or 4 years ago or whenever. But I would definitely recommend this to someone who is interested in Gundam and hope that would nudge them into the original, which I have a little bit more fondness for, but I like cheesy, colorful, you know, fancy lad superpower stuff. So that's just me. But I, again, like this is just so different and so good. And yeah, so I very much would recommend this to someone who's interested in like just dipping their toes in a Gundam.
Totally. So Jorge, as you know, every episode we watch, we will do a rating system of 5 body pillows, on a score from 1 to 5 Norris Packard body pillows, what would you give this episode?
I would have to give it a 4.5. I think this is a near perfect episode. There's just the little weirdness that we talked about with Shiro and a little bit of like a dialogue here and there. Mm-hmm. It just shy of being a perfect encapsulated episode, a perfect episode of 8th MS, and just like a perfect like mecha sci-fi military episode. Just barely, just so close. I really want to give it that other half, but it's just
bro, I'm giving it the 5 pillow treatment. I think this is my first 5.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying about the dialogue and sometimes the tone is like off and the writing is not super great at parts, but that's anime, dude. It's anime. Like anime, you can't expect it unless you're watching like a Ghibli film.
But up, that's anime.
Exactly. So it's like I can excuse it because of what it is. And if I'm holding it as a comparison to other animes, I'm like, this is a perfect episode. It's a 5 pillow episode.
I think our Gao Gaigar episode and this episode are what kind of shows our like slight difference in taste.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's a pretty cool little, cause yeah, we're close, but we have like our different little, what we're like picky about or what we're less mm-hmm. picky about.
Yeah, but, no, that's a good point. Yeah. I forgot that. Yeah. Gao Gaigar was your five pillow episode as well.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, yeah, you know, nonetheless, high marks for this show from both of us. So, yes.
Yeah, high praise for an excellent episode of anime. And my cat is just rubbing her face all over my keyboard. So I'm going to move that.
You have to give her own keyboard.
I should buy my cat a keyboard. It'll just give me an excuse to buy another fancy mechanical keyboard. So, yeah, that's like you said, that's our episode. If you guys want to follow us on social media, we are on Instagram and Twitter at Aging Otakus. You can also find us on iTunes and Spotify. If you want to give us a rating, please be sure to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And we can, if you want to give us a recommendation for an anime that you think is a 5-pillow episode, feel free to leave it in the comments and we will consider any 5-star recommendations. Other than that, Jorge, where can they find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Jorge Labrador. It's J-O-R-G-E. And then Labrador, like Labrador Retriever. I haven't been on Twitter as actively as much, but I do retweet some funny stuff. But I've been working on a couple of like home projects and whatnot. So I'm trying to keep the idle scrolling to a minimum right now. But, you know, I pop my head in.
Okay, nice. You can find me at Chambray_Poppy. On Twitter and on Instagram. You can also find me on Twitch. I've been streaming a little bit more, but like, you know, very sporadically, especially I might start streaming more of Escape from Tarkov. So you can find me at twitch.tv/criticalATK. I don't think I have any kind of schedule set and I probably won't set one. So fuck you. But yeah, give us a watch and give us a listen if you want to go into any more episodes of anime. Next week we will be discussing something we haven't figured out yet, but we'll be the first to let you guys know on Twitter.
Yeah, it'll be good, Instagram. Unless it's not.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, no, that's exactly right. It'll be good unless it's not. But yeah, other than that, guys, hope you enjoyed, and take it easy.
Bye!